welcome to episode 28 of Divided by a Werewolf Show. Mitch and I were regaling each other with tales of celebrity encounters.
Encounters.
But don't worry, that's toward at the end of the show, and the outtakes, we're going to throw it in there. Hope everybody is doing well. It is August, which means we are less, is it a month? Yeah, about a month out from Destiny 2.
Yeah, a month out as of yesterday, I think.
Mm-hmm. Barring any major problems, which I would hope by now they would know about. We got a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to get into some game stuff, and then we got a couple movies, as usual, to talk about. First and foremost, though, I was so disappointed to not be talking about The Dark Tower on tonight's show. Because I really was hoping that it would be good. And I remember thinking when I first started reading reviews, like, oh, okay, well, these people, they haven't read The Dark Tower, so it's fine. You know how you try to justify in your head why somebody didn't like something? And then the more I read,
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, right. And then the more I read, and I was like, when the one cat was like, you know, at one point Stephen King wrote himself into the books, I was like, God damn it, this person knows.
Yeah.
It was so disappointing to me when I read about the movie is when you consider just how fucking weird the Dark Tower series is. Like, it is weird, and sometimes it works. Most of the time it works. Sometimes it doesn't. I'm not going to lie. I mean, there's like 7 or 8 books, whatever it is. It's not all. They're not all going to hit. And just how kind of by the numbers the movie sounded, and that was the biggest disappointment thing to me. Like, and I mean, it's possible that I could watch it and be like, no, this thing's great.
Right.
But I think at this point, you know, watching it in the hopes, like, you almost don't want to watch it, because then what if you love it and they're like, yeah, we're not making it anymore, and then you're like,
yeah,
fuck.
that's basically where I'm at. Like, me having no, almost zero, I have a little knowledge of the books, because like I was talking to somebody the other night, like, my dad, my entire life was a member of that, remember that Time Life book
club? Hell yeah,
for him, right? So my dad was a member of that shit, and so he saved all those books, and so I sort of, you know, took those. So I have almost all the Dark Tower. I have everything he ever got from that club.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got hardbacks of fucking Firestarter, Christine, Cujo. Like, I've got shit from when I was little up until probably a little over halfway through the Dark Tower just from that club.
Right, right, right.
I just haven't read them.
Right.
And so it's like, I wanted the movie to be like, and it still may be for me, because I don't, you know, I haven't seen it. And I think, I hope when I do see it, because me and my dad are going to see it this weekend.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, he emailed me out of the blue, and he's like, when are we going to see The Dark Tower? And I was like, when do you want to go? Like,
right.
I didn't know you, I should have known, duh, that you would like to see it. And so, yeah, we're going to go this weekend. My hope is that the movie is at least interesting enough that it makes me want to read the books, because I have at least half of them already, so.
I would say just read them anyway. I mean, obviously, everybody's free time is their own, but it is really interesting just to me, because they really do – they're all over the place. Like Wizards in Glass, which is essentially entirely a story of Roland talking about like shit he did when he was younger, is a straight-up fantasy novel. Just – I mean, there's some like horrific parts to it. But it is straight up fantasy, and it's fucking awesome. That's when you really get into the gunslingers and, you know, and everything. And I mean, I'd say they're worth reading. I mean, obviously, when you get to the later parts, when you really decided, okay, it's time to finish them, I think they get a little less effective, because they start bringing in a lot of stuff from his other books and things like that. And I could kind of see how maybe where that would like lose people.
Sure.
The first, you know, 3 or 4 books, I think, are great.
Yeah, I at least have 4.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Cool.
That's interesting, though, because that's where the comic kind of started, I guess.
Yeah, the comic starts with the stuff that's in Wizards in Glass.
Okay, because I was going to say, yeah, I read the comic for at least the first year or two, and it was all him being younger and all that good stuff.
Yeah, stuff with his mom and
yeah.
Which is important. It's important backstory, but they don't. You know, I mean, the, you know, I could talk about this all night, but the story of him writing the Dark Tower to me is just as interesting as the books themselves, just because of how long they took and kind of what he was going through and all that stuff. And I think that's kind of, if you are a huge Stephen King fan and you kind of know like somewhat about his life and career, they become a little more meaningful. And if you don't care about any of that shit, I think the final like three books do become, you know, there's just a bunch of extra shit you don't care about.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyway, all right. So you started Just Cause 3. I feel bad. I forgot how long those load times were.
Good God. So it's funny. Like I heard that, read that, but then I read that it was patched and it was supposed to be better. I don't know, but I played it and, you know, I'm sort of getting into it a little bit. I don't know how much you remember at the beginning, but basically the beginning is basically just a cutscene that you sort of interact with occasionally.
Yeah.
And I got to this point where they wanted me to grapple up to this, the roof of this tower where there was a minigun and just rain hell down on these Jeeps that were pulling up. And so I'm like, all right, cool. So I got up there and I got past the part. The last thing you do is take down this attack helicopter. And then the screen goes black and there's a little loading icon down there. And dude, I shit you not, I sat there for about 6 minutes on the stream being like, I heard it was bad, but goddamn. Like, I was like, is it frozen? Is it like, am I, you know, did it drop? I don't know what the fuck's happening. So finally I had to just shut the thing down. And what sucked was when I booted it back up, like apparently it doesn't save until after that point. So I had to start over.
Yeah.
So I played the first 10 minutes or 10, 15 minutes twice on stream, which sucked. And then of course I cut the episode, but I was just like, fuck, it's, you know, but that being said, you know, games crash. I get that. You know, it wasn't like, oh, you know, I did say on Twitter, I was like, just load three. Fuck.
Yeah,
this shit.
I saw that.
But, you know, it was dumb fun. And I enjoyed it, so I'm looking forward to getting back into it. I was going to play last night, but it was like Jacob's orientation night, and so I was at the school, which the school elected in Alabama in August to not run the air conditioner for.
Oh, nice.
So that was a fun hour to hour and 15 minutes in a junior high school filled with like 1,000 to 2,000 people. Between students and parents.
Very nice.
And so I got home and I was like, yep, that's enough of this. It's time to abuse some alcohol. So I didn't play anything last night, but I am looking forward to getting back into it.
Yeah, I forgot about the load times. It's funny how you kind of forget that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, similar to that, I remember, you know, when I finally went back to playing Witcher 3 for the final DLC, I had forgotten just how long those load times were as well, and I was getting wrecked in the game because the DLC made it significantly harder.
Right.
And I hated to lower the difficulty level, but I remember one night I counted, and it was like I spent, you know, you spend like a minute, 2 minutes in the loading times. Well, let's say you die, you know, 4 or 5 times. You know, that could be like 10 minutes of load times. I mean, that's, when you only play for like an hour, that's just not really kind of how you want to be spending your time.
Yep. So,
but that dumb fun is the absolute best way to approach that game.
Yeah.
Because if you, I mean, it's just to get in there and fucking wreck shit and, you know, just kind of see like, you know, what you can blow up and that type of thing.
I don't know if you watched the episode, but again, I'm doing this, I don't know. I swear to God, I pay attention, but sometimes I'm just my goldfish brain is just whatever. So like the probably the highlight of the episode is when it's trying to teach you to tether two things together.
Oh my God! Yes, yes.
Yeah. So so I didn't necessarily pay attention to the fact that it was telling me to hold down L1 or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I did was tether an explosive barrel and then fucking fling it back at myself.
Yeah.
So
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
So that was the funniest part of the first episode.
Yes. No, I remember. Yeah, I mean, I remember having a good time with that game. And, you know, I mean, the fun thing, too, is just to, like, get an attack helicopter and just fly around and fuck shit up.
Yeah.
But cool. Well, I'm glad that, I mean, I know it's frustrating, but at least you were able to kind of get past it and get some time in.
Yeah.
So for me, I finally finished Breath of the Wild this morning.
Oh, cool.
It's showing 135 hours in.
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. And but what I realized this morning, so this is how stupid I am, and I mentioned this on Twitter, but this is how stupid I am. So, okay, this isn't really a spoiler, but basically there are these four like kind of main, they're not dungeons, they're sort of like dungeons that you have to do. Well, you don't have to, they're entirely optional, but if you do all, each one of them that you do in the end, when you go to fight Ganon at the end, they each one of them reduces his health by 1/8. So if you do all four of them, then he has his health cut in half before you even start fighting him. Well, each one of them gives you a special power. And I won't like get into what they are because I know, you know, at some point you're going to play it.
Yeah.
I will tell you this though. The first one that I did, the power that you get is that if you die, it will automatically heal you in full. I didn't know that it recharges. So I spent the entire goddamn game, all 135 hours, every time I died and it brought me back to full health, I reloaded the game because I was like, well, I want to save this for the final boss. And then I got some other powers, and just without getting into what they are, the way they're mapped, it was kind of unavoidable that you would use them. And I saw the counter because it had a counter. It was like times one. And I thought, okay, well, you can only use it once. And the other one had a counter of times three. And then when it got to where the times three was done, the picture, the icon got all kind of like just the outline. It wasn't filled in. And then it slowly started to recharge. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This whole game, I have been reloading saves when I've been killed where I could have just let it heal me and then it would fucking recharge. I felt so, but it doesn't tell you. It never says, hey, this recharges. It's just like, hey, you got this power. It'll heal you. And I was like, well, we need to save that shit until we need it. Yeah. So when you eventually play it, just keep that in mind. Don't
Will
make
do.
The same mistake that I did. But the only other thing, I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. Obviously, I put that much time into it. I do wish, though, that, you know, so open world games, there's two types, right? There's the type that when you're done, it drops you in the world and you can just kind of go do whatever. And it is you know, what you did in the main game is carried over. Like GTA 5 is like that, right? Like,
yeah.
Once you're done, depending on, you can go visit people's graves if you let people die or whatnot. Or
right.
There's games like Breath of the Wild where when you're done, if you want to get back in the world, you go in right before you do the final battle.
Yeah, yeah.
And those I like a lot less because, I don't know, you just kind of go, well, I spent all this time getting this world put back.
Yeah.
But you also understand, like, why they're not necessarily going to do that. So, but anyway. But it was really good. I well enjoyed it. I'm really kind of disappointed that I don't have anything on the Switch right now to play. But I did rent Lego City Undercover. So we'll see how that goes.
Cool.
All right. So we have two movies we're going to talk about tonight. First one, well, I don't know. You can tell me which one you want to do first. The two movies are Okja, which we were going to talk about last week.
Yeah.
Or last time, but then we got into other things. And The Black Coat's Daughter, which is a horror movie by Oz Perkins of I Am the Pretty Thing Who Lives Under the Stairs. Or lives in the house.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, really? You didn't realize that? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's him. Mm-hmm.
All right. I'd rather do that one last, honestly.
Okay.
I feel like there's more to talk about because, like, not that Okja is bad, but Okja, even though it's 2 hours long, it is pretty much, you know, it's kind of straightforward.
Okay.
It's weird, but it's straightforward.
Yeah. So let me bring that one up because I always get his name wrong.
Is it Bong Joon-ho?
Yeah, that's it. But there's a lot of people in that movie. Now, he previously, so Tilda Swinton's in it, and, you know, they work together on Snowpiercer.
Yes.
But Joon-ho Bong. Yeah. Joon-ho Bong.
Yeah.
Sorry. But Paul Dano from, he was in Prisoners, and he was in, probably the role he's most known for would be There Will Be Blood.
Yep.
So he's in it. Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad is in it. Jake Gyllenhaal, he's in it. Glenn from Walking Dead.
Walking Dead. Yep.
He's in it. So there are a lot of people in this movie, especially for something made specifically for Netflix. Mm-hmm. Was it made for Netflix or was it just exclusive to Netflix?
I haven't looked that much into it, but I get the impression that for his, like, Netflix, you know, will pick one of these, like, certain movies, especially foreign films, and present it as if it was made for Netflix. I don't know that this was, but I didn't look into it, but I get the impression that it was just something that existed and Netflix took the opportunity to sort of get it out there for us over here.
Okay, because I know, like, Amazon, like, they actually, like produce stuff.
Right, right.
Like, Manchester by the Sea, that the reason it's on Amazon Prime is because they kick some money over to it.
Right. Well, the only reason why I say that is because, like, you know, Netflix has that section of their stuff, and I haven't seen this in that.
Well, it has the Lego, listen to me, it has the logo on it when I looked at it, which is what the only reason why I thought. Anyway. Doesn't matter. The point is, so this movie, it's weird because it's a satire, but I feel like it's making fun of everything. And like for me, and maybe this is just the wrong way of thinking about things. Typically, when I think of a satire, I think of something that is picking kind of one or a couple things to make fun of to make a point about how ridiculous those things are.
Yeah.
And this movie was making fun of seemingly everything that would be have an interest in or be around the story of the movie. So the story is that Tilda Swinton, she is the head of a large, like, agriculture food company, kind of like a Monsanto. And in an effort to try to make their efforts of making genetically modified food more palatable to the general public, they genetically engineer these super pigs and send one off to 26 different farmers around the world. And whoever raises the best one, they're going to have like a contest, and whatever pig is the best, whatever farmer raises it gets like $500,000. And they're going to have this big public ad campaign where everybody's like, yay, super pig. And the goal is basically just to eat it. It's going to be a food. And so Okja is the name of the super pig that was raised by this young girl in Korea, her and her father. And her father keeps telling
– Grandfather.
Grandfather has told the girl that, hey, I bought Okja so we could keep her. Well, all this time he's been lying to her.
Right.
And when the time comes for the agricultural company to come and take Okja away from her, she then goes on a mission to get Okja back. And Jake Gyllenhaal plays a TV naturalist doctor, kind of like a Steve Irwin.
Yeah.
You know, who is somewhat fallen on bad times, but the company employs him because they figure that anybody who, you know, folks see that this guy's okay with them, the fact that they're raising these super pigs, then they're not going to think twice about it. Paul Dano plays the leader of the Animal Liberation Front, who is trying to rescue Okja, and then Giancarlo Esposito plays he's like an advisor to Tilda Swinton, and it kind of goes from there. But the movie simultaneously makes fun of Monsanto type companies, animal rights activist groups, celebrities, and I think, and I'd be interesting to hear your opinion on this, people mm-hmm. who eat meat.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely. So when you consider all of the parties that maybe would have a vested interest in the notion of raising a genetically modified animal for the purpose of consumption, I feel like they were making fun of everybody involved. And I don't know if making fun is the right word, but they are
shown as a sort of non, I don't know, flattering light, I guess, sort of, so to speak. I don't know that they went out of their way to make fun, but you could definitely get the idea that, yeah, it's sort of, they're shown as being not sort of the best people.
With the exception of people who eat meat. And the reason I say that is because I think that, so long story short, at one point in time, you know, the girl, I forget her name. Let me look it up here. Well, it doesn't say.
The little girl?
Yeah.
Oh, Mia.
Mia. So at one point when Mia is going to rescue Okja, she essentially goes into what would be considered a slaughterhouse. And aside from the fact that, I mean, these super pigs are fucking huge, so the equipment that they have to use to slaughter them is much bigger, it's really not that much different than I think what you would see
true.
At a slaughterhouse for cows.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that all this time you, as a viewer, you're like, yeah, they can't take Okja away from her. That's terrible. Like, here, this super pig, it's supposed to be intelligent. We're supposed to feel like, you know, it can communicate. It's got feelings and all this stuff. And then when they bring into the slaughterhouse, we're supposed to be horrified of what they were doing. But if you know anything about how the cow goes from being a cow to the burger on your plate, you would know that that's it. Like, what they showed, that's it.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And so I remember watching it going, okay, like, I get it. Like, I totally get it. Like, but I don't know, because they didn't make a point to, like, point out some, you know, someone who was like, no, we shouldn't eat, you know, we shouldn't eat Okja. Look how smart she is. This is delicious. You know what I mean? Like, like, they really, that was the only one that it was like, as a viewer, it was, the onus was kind of on you to recognize that that's kind of what was going on with that particular scene. That, like, we're perfectly okay feeling like, well, no, we can't eat this super cute, somewhat intelligent animal, but we're perfectly okay eating some dumbass cow. Like,
right, yeah. Yeah, like, I say, yeah, I'm sitting there eating a hamburger and be like, no!
Yeah.
Don't kill Okja.
Right, right. And so, but I felt like, I don't know, like, I enjoyed the movie, but at the same time, the other groups that they were making fun of, I just was, I didn't, the sting of it was somewhat gone, because I'm like, yeah, I think companies like Monsanto, I think they do some seriously shady shit in terms of probably hiding from folks, like, how exactly the food is produced, or you know, that type of thing. And I'm, you know, and animal rights groups, I'm sure at times they have been less than, I don't know what the word is, but they've cared less about people and more about animals.
Sure.
In what they're doing. So you know, when they were kind of like, you know, taking the piss out of all those groups, I just was like, yeah, okay. You know what I mean? It didn't feel particularly biting, because I didn't feel like they were saying really anything. There wasn't anything I was like, oh, I never thought of that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It was an enjoyable movie to watch. I thought the performances were great. I thought Jake Gyllenhaal as this kind of, like, washed up Berlin who realizes what he's doing is fucked up, but also was like, well, what do I have left?
Right. What else am I going to do? Right. Yeah.
Right. Right. I thought he was great, but you know, at the same time, I feel like Snowpiercer was a little bit more on the nose in terms of, like, kind of satirizing.
Yeah.
You know, the difference between, you know, rich and poor and that type of thing.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I honestly, like, this is probably, now I haven't seen everything the guy's done, but Okja, again, good movie, but probably my least favorite based on, I would consider this of the, if you want to call them the big three or whatever, which for me they would be because, you know, they kind of go in order. So I fucking love The Host.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. I fucking love Snowpiercer, but not as much as The Host. That's second. This one I would put third to those two.
Yeah. Yeah. I still haven't seen The Host. And it's only because sometimes it's hard for me when I'm working and watching something to have something with subtitles.
Yeah.
So Okja was, you know, it was kind of like half and half, like when,
right.
when Mia and Okja and her grandfather were talking, you know, they had subtitles, but, otherwise, you know, the majority of it was in English.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit easier, but yeah, I still haven't watched that yet. But from what I've heard, I'm not surprised that you would kind of put them in that order.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. If you like big monster movies, which I do.
Of course, absolutely.
It's amazing. Wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, again, it's you know, like Snowpiercer, like Okja, it's 2 hours plus, but it's really fucking good.
Yeah. All right, so that leaves Black Coat's Daughter, which was put out 2 years ago. Well, 2015, you know, where exactly.
Well, that's weird because I think, like, mainstream, it's not that old because – apparently it did theatricals.
Oh, yeah. February
as a movie called,
2017.
Right. It was a movie called February that did the festival circuit and it showed and this and that. But I think as far as a wide release and the title Black Coat's Daughter, it's fairly new.
Okay. Because I remember reading that it was like made in 2015. But
right, okay, yeah. too. But it was called February initially. And like I don't know if that title didn't go over well or what happened when they got down to distribution. But
okay. So, I want to hear your thoughts on it first.
Okay.
But basically, so without getting too much into, although I do feel like we do need to spoil it, which I feel kind of bad about.
Yeah, it's this is one of those ones where it's really hard to talk about.
You can't talk about it without spoiling it, but at right. the same time, with it being spoiled, it somewhat ruins the impact.
Yes. Exactly.
But I'm gonna go out on a yeah. So anyway. But let's see. So there's some good people in it. Obviously, Emma Roberts. Kiernan Shipka, who plays Kat. I'm not aware of her work, but talking to my wife, and apparently she's on Mad Men.
Oh, okay.
She plays the daughter. James Remar is Bill, Lauren Holly. And then Lucy Boynton, who played Rose. And her name sounds really familiar, but I'm not sure what I have seen her in. So
for me, honestly, the only two people that I recognize are James Remar and Emma Roberts. So,
yeah. And then, like I mentioned before, so Oz Perkins, the guy who did it. And then, we did do an episode of I'm the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. And that, so this is a story, takes place in a boarding school. It's a holiday week or week holiday break and, Kat and Rose, are both staying in school for various reasons. At the same time that Emma Roberts, who plays a woman named Joan, is making her way back to the school when weird shit starts to happen. Mm-hmm. And she gets picked up by James Remar and Holly. I just said her name. I want to say Holly Hunter, but I know that's not right. That's just the name that popped. Lauren Holly, sorry. They are also on their way to the school, and they had a daughter who had passed away a few years ago. And then all of these kind of folks' lives somewhat come together.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to hear your thoughts on it first.
Okay, so it's very bleak.
It is bleak.
It's dark. I don't know how. I don't want to get too spoilery. So it's basically, you know, the Kat is this younger girl, and she's, you know, of course, like you said, they're at the school for different reasons, and Lucy Boynton is Rose is supposed to be looking after her. Lucy Boynton has her own shit going on. She's knocked up, and she's going to confront the baby daddy or whatever she's doing. Leaves Kat alone. And Kat ends up, she tells her before she leaves of this, there's two sisters at the school, and they're like, you know, like nuns or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh yeah, they worship the devil. And she's like, what, who told you that and shit? And then she just leaves her. And I was like, all right, that's not fucking creepy when you're, when the priest or whatever of the school has said, hey, you know, she's obviously, she has some sort of relationship with this guy because she has some performance she's supposed to do, and she's kind of bummed that he's not going to be there to see it. And she thinks her, you know, her parents, they're not there yet, and she doesn't know why and this and that. At least that's what you're supposed to believe. And it, you know, it just snowballs, man. And it gets so fucking dark. And, like, I'm not going, this thing freaked me the fuck out.
Did it really?
It did. And I will tell you, like, oh, God damn it. I don't know how to do it without spoiling it. So let's just say.
To. No, we have to, because I have to talk.
From this point forward,
when I talk about. Yeah, so at this point, let me look at the time. 40 minutes. Okay.
All right. So when the girl leaves and you see sort of Kat there on her own, and she wanders down to the basement and this and that, whatever. And then the girl comes back and she's looking for her and shit. When she was down there bowing to the fucking furnace, that crawled all up under my skin, dude.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. I was just like, oh, fuck no. I was like, all right, it's Satan. Like, Satan's in this motherfucker. I know it. And that shit, that's just one of those things that gets to me. And so just seeing that, I was like, well, this is freaking me the fuck out. I'm all in now. Like, I'm trying to figure things out and shit. And it's like, you know, how in the movie it's two different timelines, but it doesn't tell you that, but it gives you hints.
It does.
Which is really cool. Once it wraps up, you're just like, oh shit.
Right.
And, man, I fucking loved it. Like, I was just like, you had told me before I watched this that the guy who made that fucking I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in This Lame-Ass Movie, like, did this the same thing, I would not have believed you.
See, I actually enjoyed I Am the Pretty Thing a lot more than I enjoyed this movie.
Really?
And the reason, and here's why, so the big twist is that, as Mitch said, is that Kat and Joan are the same person.
Yeah.
So Joan is making her way back to the school, and what Mitch hasn't mentioned that is important, but is that Kat ends up murdering Rose and the two caretakers and cutting their heads off and placing them in front of the boiler as a sacrifice to Satan, and then gets shot by a police officer who is, like, investigating the place. And she ends up going to a mental institution, and then a priest does the lamest exorcism ever. Just like, leave.
But it works.
Right. She sees this horned figure in the shadows, and she says to it, don't go. So you figure, okay, whatever happened, like, she wanted to be possessed.
Yeah.
And then, So at the same time that, like, Joan is trying to get back to the school, you don't know that that's Kat.
Right.
And when she finally gets back to the school, and this is where I'd like to hear your interpretation of what happens.
Sure.
She does some stuff. She tries to make another sacrifice and gets to the boiler room, and the boiler's cold.
Yep.
And then she is seen crying outside on the road. So at this point in the movie, Emma Roberts is crying out on the road, and I'm like, what the fuck just happened? I had to go online and I had to read it. Because here's my problem.
Okay.
And I feel like that from a casting perspective, everybody who was in the movie did a great job in their performances. Mm-hmm. However, Kat, what's her name? Let me
look it up again. Kiernan Shipka.
Yeah. Kiernan Shipka and Emma Roberts don't look anything alike.
Well, sure. Yeah.
And they're 9 years apart. Emma Roberts 9 years ago was in fucking Scream 4 or whatever the fuck it was. And you know what she looked like in that movie? Emma Roberts. Yeah. If you're trying to do a movie with a young Julia Roberts and you're trying to get somebody who played a young Julia Roberts, fucking by all means, cast Emma Roberts. I'll be there day one. But in this movie, what's supposed to be the big twist is that Kat is Joan and they didn't look anything alike. So I didn't know that's what was happening.
Oh.
Because I was like, they don't – wait a minute. Well, what?
They showed you that, though, when she
I know.
Strangled that lady and looked at her name tag, and it was Joan.
I know, but they did, like, flashbacks. Like, they showed her strangling the lady, and then they showed her looking at her driver's license, and it said Joan, and it didn't really look like her. And they showed her in the hotel, and she's got a scar in the same place that she would have gotten
shot. Yeah, she got shot.
But my point is that there were two things in this movie that kind of lost it for me, because I felt like the twist ending was what was the most important thing, and the stuff that was supposed to play service to it didn't work out as well as it should have. Thing number one is the casting. I mean, the reality is, like, Emma Roberts is young enough that if somebody wanted to cast her in, like, a looks young enough, they could cast her in a movie where she was a high schooler or a boarding school or college. I mean,
True.
So she looks young enough, and 9 years is a big difference if you're going from 10 to 19.
Right.
It is not a big enough difference going from boarding school, junior, senior, whatever, freshman, junior, senior.
She's a freshman,
Yeah, freshman, so which is what, 14 to 25. It's so for them to look so different, and I didn't buy that. But then also
– gotcha.
The whole the James Remar and Lauren Holly are driving back to the memorial for their daughter, who Kat cut her head off,
right?
Put it in front of the boiler.
Yeah,
you're trying to tell me that he would not recognize this girl?
Well,
like, I mean, there would have been a trial regardless of whether or not she was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. He picks her up and is just like, I have no idea who you are. So I'm going to let you in my car. Like, that's the only, you know, so, and I hate to, I don't like doing this because I don't want to tear shit down that people like, but that's, that for me is kind of what got in the way. And it really bothered me because, God damn it, this movie, the atmosphere is fucking great.
Yeah.
The way that it unfolds up until the end, you don't know what's going on. Because James Remar shows a picture, he says, my daughter died, and he shows a picture of Rose, and then it cuts to a scene with her and Rose. And I'm sitting there watching going, oh shit, she's a ghost.
Yeah.
Like, and then I'm looking because I don't know if you paid attention. Like, I'm not saying you didn't pay attention, but if you kind of pay attention, the way they kind of do some stuff is you're like, can other people see her?
Yeah.
Like, up until that point, like, I don't know if she's
particularly
real.
Like, the diner when he goes back to dinner. Yeah.
Yes.
I did notice that.
So I was like, oh, shit, she's a ghost.
Right.
She's going to do some shit to this girl. Get out, girl. She's a ghost. You know, like, so there was so much great stuff in the music.
Yeah.
And the performances and the atmosphere of just dread.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It is just dread up until the point of when the ending came that I was so disappointed in what the ending was that, one, I couldn't fully appreciate, because to fully appreciate the ending, and I want to get your opinion on why she was crying.
Sure.
I think to fully appreciate the ending, which there's two interpretations I read, both are fucked up. One is immensely more fucked up than the other.
Okay.
And I just felt like a full appreciation of it, I was robbed because I couldn't get past.
Yeah.
Well, one, I didn't know what was happening, which is difficult.
Right.
But then just those kind of little nagging things.
Yeah.
And I really – you know, I just enjoyed everything up until that point. And I love a good fucking Hail Satan movie. Like, when she lifts that up and she's like, Hail Satan! I'm like, oh, shit! This bitch is possessed! Like,
So that was – all right, so here's my whole thing. And like I said, man, I this was one of the few times where I wasn't drinking when I watched the movie. Like, I was – And once she was bowing to the fucking, and I knew what was happening, I was like, okay, yeah. Oh, shit, I'm all in, right?
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, so we didn't touch on the fact that obviously it's like she mentions after she's sort of, we know she's possessed, she tells Rose, my parents are dead. They're not.
Okay, that's what I didn't get, because she sees like a flashback of like a car, like yeah. a wrecked car. Was that like her
that
parents?
That was her parents, yeah. That's what okay. I thought. I was
that's
like, all
what
right.
I thought too, but I wasn't
so
sure.
My thing was like she already knew that her parents were dead, but she hadn't accepted it maybe, or she was having trouble with that. And that's sort of why she attached on to the priest and why he couldn't be there for her performance. And so then he let her down and she was there by herself, knowing her parents weren't coming, knowing he wasn't going to be there for her recital or whatever. And then Rose, who's she kept saying, but Father, what's his nut said, you're supposed to watch over me. You're supposed to watch yeah. over me. She kept saying that. Because I think she's just grasping for any sort of authority figure or any sort of influence or whatever from somebody older, and everybody just keeps leaving her. And so the phone rings, and you don't know it at the time, but it goes back, and you hear what is essentially Satan on the other end of the line.
See, I don't remember the – because I was working while I was watching. So walk me through this. So the phone rings.
So the phone rings, and – you see her walk down this dimly lit hallway. It's super dark. She picks up the phone, and then the movie cuts to what Rose is doing.
Okay, right.
Later on, you see that scene again, only you get the conversation. And this is when she goes and murders the sisters, because you hear her say, you know, you hear this voice on the phone, and it's like the devil, and it's like, you know, says something, and it was like, kill the cunts.
Oh, so okay, yeah.
She goes and kills the nuns, and then Rose comes back and she kills her. And I'm like, okay, so she's all in. And now we know why she's bowing in the fucking basement, because she is offering these heads. And
right.
And then so, you know, you get that she sort of enjoys, I guess, being this way, like the things she says, and she's not fighting it at all. Like she's mm-hmm. like, you know what? Yep. Somebody's finally paying attention at least. And so she's willing to murder and do all these horrible things, get shot. Then you have Kat, who obviously, like, when she gets the exorcism and the demon leaves, and so she's like, don't go. That's what I was like, oh shit, she liked it, right? She right. needed that, right? Because her parents are gone, everybody abandons her, and then she gets picked up by her parents and whatever, and she's just trying to get back to the place. She escapes the mental institution. She's just trying to get back there because she wants it back. And then when she gets there, it's abandoned. She kills James Remar and his wife, kills them, and she's like, all right, all I have to do is offer these heads. She gets down to the basement. And the thing to think about there for me was why she cried, right? So because the furnace was cold. There's nothing there. So yet the evil has left this place, and she doesn't know where to find it. And she has to realize, because you have to understand, you know, she did these things when the evil had sort of was in her and shit, right? So that sort of maybe in her own mind made it okay, or that's why she had to do it. And now she's doing it, and she's not nuts. So she's never murdered like this without – you know, having, oh, well, Satan made me do it, or I'm right. doing it for Satan. Well, I just did it for nothing. So I'm just a fucking murderer now.
Okay, so I read – that's the thing. I read two different interpretations of why she was crying. Interpretation one, which I think is the less fucked up version, is that she murdered James Remar and his wife as, like, the last thing that kind of, like, Satan had told her to do. And – then he truly was gone. Like, right. that was the last thing that, like, for whatever reason, it still kind of had a hold on her. And then once she killed them, because she had already killed Rose, that Satan kind of finally left, and she was crying in the road because she the full realization of what she had done had kind of come upon her.
Okay.
So that was the one interpretation. The other interpretation I read, which I think is more fucked up, is that she goes back to the boiler room with these heads, and Satan ain't there anymore,
Right.
And so she's upset that she can't be possessed again.
Yeah, that was what I got out of it.
That's what I tend to think more too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I landed on it. Like she was, you know, she offered these heads and he was gone. And she had to then sort of come to grips with the fact that she had just murdered two people who had been perfectly nice to her, overly nice to her, for nothing. So
yeah, I don't think she cared so much about that. And the reason I say that is part one of the clues that led you to believe that she was actually Joan was actually Kat was when James Remard shows her the picture of Rose. She goes in the bathroom and she chuckles.
Yeah, she laughs. Yeah, that's true.
She knows shit. I killed her.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily agree that she was upset that she killed these people for nothing. I think she was just mainly upset that, you know, Satan wasn't back.
Satan was gone, yeah.
So.
Okay.
And I really, like, I know it's stupid, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's a terrible thing to say, but once I kind of read that, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, yeah. Like.
Right.
But I just was. I guess it bothered me that.
No, you make very valid points that I sort of didn't consider because I, you know how I get, man. I get blinders on, where I'm just like, oh shit, Satan. Like I don't overthink. Like, why the fuck would he pick this person up? And holy shit, how would he not know? Because clearly she had to go to a trial. And things I never even considered.
Yeah,
but you're absolutely right.
But I mean the casting. I mean it's a shame because I love Emma Roberts. I think she's great.
Yeah.
I thought the casting in the movie was good. I felt that the movie really did keep you on your toes in terms of trying to figure out what exactly is going on here.
Yeah.
I think that I agree with you completely that you know I'm the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House is a much slower film. Absolutely is a much slower film.
Yeah.
But it has a lot of the same kind of dread and that type of thing. It's just that the payoff in this movie there's very little payoff in that movie.
Right.
It's all atmosphere and very, very little payoff. And so,
yeah.
I totally can get why, you know, folks wouldn't be down for that. I think because at least I understood that one. That's why I was like,
yeah.
I think it's worth watching. I think the guy is super talented.
Yeah.
He wrote and directed both movies.
Right.
Also
Anthony Perkins' son. We didn't mention that, but
yeah. Yes. Yeah, he's Anthony Perkins' son. Yep.
Which is cool.
Absolutely. And I feel bad because we did spoil it, but at the same time, I mean, you really can't.
It would have been a very brief conversation.
Yeah, you really can't have a conversation about this movie without kind of explaining, you know, kind of what happens.
Right.
So, it's funny because I feel like between House of the Devil, that's the name of it, right?
Yeah, the Ty West. Yeah, House of the Devil.
Yeah, House of the Devil, Devil's Candy,
yep.
The Witch,
yep.
Even The Exorcist on Fox. I'm just really, like, it's just really awesome to see Satanic Possession making a comeback.
Yeah, man, if you're as fucking tired of Blumhouse ghost movie jump scare fucking flicks as I am, man, let's bring
Annabelle.
Bring
Annabelle
Satan
creation.
Back in this shit.
Hell yeah, goddamn, start at the fucking beginning.
Exactly.
Like, I remember as a kid watching Rosemary's Baby.
Ugh, yes.
And just being fucked up for
fucking
days.
That movie scared the shit out of me.
Just for days. And when you talk about a movie that's all buildup.
Yep.
I mean, it is Rosemary's Baby. I mean, there's just a scene at the end where it dawns on. I mean, aside from Mia Farrow, like, going to fucking town on some raw meat.
Right.
You know, for the most part, she's just like, there's something wrong with my baby. And her husband's like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then her neighbors are kind of weird.
Right.
And then at the end, you're like, holy shit.
Exactly. Which
you know,
was
she has
so
that
fucking good. And that's why the remake was so fucking bad.
Oh, I didn't even see it. Fuck
Jesus,
that.
Dude. Like, no, how the original kept you guessing until the end.
Yeah.
You know, the new one was like a 2-hour or like a 4-hour two-night event on TV.
Oh, right, yeah, right.
You weren't even an hour in before you knew what was
going on. Your girlfriend's been fucked by Satan.
Right. But I'm saying that it told you. It lets you know that early into a four-hour fucking remake. I was like, you missed the whole fucking point.
Yeah.
The whole point of Rosemary's Baby is you don't know until the end.
Right. You think maybe she's going crazy.
Right.
She's got, there's something weird.
That's
with
why it's so good.
Yeah. And then yeah. I mean, So, I mean, I saw Devil's Candy is also on Netflix. So I'll have to watch that again. That's such a great movie.
I'm so pissed because Walmart got the DVD like last week. I pre-ordered the Blu-ray on Amazon, but it's one of those deals where Walmart has a certain you know, grace period with the DVD. Well, the DVD was supposed to ship like September 13th, and I got an email yesterday. It was like, oh, no, you ain't getting that shit till late October, player. And I was like,
yeah, I mean, that is such a great such a great movie.
I'm going to have to watch it again on Netflix, I guess, because I can't wait till the end of October to watch it again.
Yeah, it's like I need to watch The Witch again and House of the Devil. I thought House of the Devil's fucking fantastic.
Same here. Loved it. I love Ty West. I don't care what anybody says.
What else has he done?
He did, what's that, House of the Devil, and then he did that movie that was so good. Oh, shit, with the two people working the theater, and then at the end, there's like the,
I know, because I watched that one too.
But I'm looking them up, it's going to bug me.
That's a good movie, I like that movie.
Yeah, let's see, Ty West. Then he did, he's been in shit too. The Innkeepers.
Yes! Innkeepers. Yes, that movie's great.
Love that movie. He did The Sacrament, which I liked, was the Jim Jones kind of found footage thing.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So he does lots of good shit, man. He did Cabin Fever 2, which I don't know how you feel about Cabin Fever, but Cabin Fever 2 was better than the first one.
People don't like Ty West?
No, people hate Ty West.
Do they really? Why?
He's pretentious, and he's this and that. These horror snobs, man. They kill my fucking soul.
The Sacrament. Yeah, I love The Sacrament. I thought that was great. I mean, shit, when you're as my age, when you're a young kid coming up and you hear about Jim Jones, you're like, what now?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
He did what? He convinced people to do what?
Yeah.
Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Come on, son. Yeah, no, I like that movie a lot. And they have the Innkeepers. You know, it's funny because the Innkeepers is one of those it doesn't seem like a horror movie because it's got more – sometimes horror movies just have a certain sheen to them in terms of how they're made. And that movie really didn't have that. So it was almost kind of surprising when it started to turn into that type of movie.
That is Ty West is like the master of the slow burn for me and just based off House of the Devil and Innkeepers, because at first you're like, well, I don't know, this is kind of slow. And then at the end you're like, holy shit. Like that was so fucking worth hour.
I feel like
38
House
minutes.
Of the Devil. I feel like House of the Devil was a little bit clearer in its intentions.
It was. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's just because, you know, growing up watching like the 70s, you
that's
know,
what it,
Rosemary's Baby.
But I guess maybe, you know, this new audience doesn't have that appreciation. Maybe, I don't know.
This new audience, you know what they need to do? If they want to remember, here's what you need to do. I'll give you two movies. This is what I was thinking what we should do. I think if there's like weeks where there's like nothing going on.
Yeah.
We should pick like a horror movie that influenced us as a kid. We each pick one and do one.
I'd love to.
For me right now, and out of a long list.
Yep.
And they were both made for TV movies, but they scared the fucking shit out of me.
Okay.
Number one, Night of the Scarecrow.
Yes, sir.
Number two, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Yep.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't do it. Couldn't not be afraid.
Yeah, right?
So, but that feel, that kind of, you know, just 70s, I don't know, not dirty, but just not polished, I guess would be the lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Like, for me, like, kind of getting that feel from House of the Devil, I was like, oh, I see you, player. I know where this is going on. I'm fucking strapped in. I can't wait.
Yep.
Bring it. Exactly. Whereas Innkeepers, you know, I felt like it had, you know, it was more surprising because it didn't seem like going into it. I mean, I knew what it was going into it because I had read, like, I was on a mission. There was, like, I don't know, I read some list of, like, top 100 horror movies or something, and I was just kind of going through them, and Innkeepers was one of them. And so I kind of knew what it was to a certain degree going into it, but I still felt like it's just a different feel. But, yeah, no, man, I love his shit. Yeah. I don't know why wouldn't you?
I don't know, man.
Who's a snob about horror movies?
Oh, you'd be surprised. You'd be very surprised.
I don't get it.
They're out there.
They're out there. Not listening to this show, probably. No,
I hope not, because fuck them.
Cool. Well, I mean, definitely, like, I'd like to watch it again. You know, I'd like to watch it again, because well, I feel like I'd have a greater appreciation for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had the DVD for a couple of weeks. I just haven't fucking watched it. So
I was just like, when you were like, I'm going to watch Black Hood's Daughter, and I was like, well, I'll look on Amazon, but shit ain't never there. And there it was. And I was like, holy shit. And I like emailed you that night. I'm like, it's on Prime Video. You're like, you cheap ass motherfucker. You can just buy that shit.
No, that's me. I buy shit I don't even like. We talked about this before. So anything I'm remotely interested in, whether it's good or bad, I'll buy it.
Yeah, oh, I hear you. All right, so I think that's probably it for tonight. I don't know what we're going to get into next couple weeks, but we'll figure something out.
Atomic Blonde, Dark Tower possibly. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know how close is it? It's soon-ish, right? It's what? Is it September?
I don't know.
Early September, maybe? I don't know.
It's going to be a tiny scare. That book scared the shit.
Yeah, me too. Books.
September 8th.
Okay, cool.
There are a few books that I can remember, like, being terrified of, and that's one of them.
Yep. Man, that fucking Destiny 2 / It episode is going to be lit.
Oh, shit. Oh, goddamn, you're right. Goddamn, you're right.
That's going to be good shit.
Holy shit, yeah. We have to fucking put 2 hours aside for that motherfucker.
You know it.
We'll have to record that shit on a Friday night.
That sounds good to me.
All right. Well, until then, this has been episode 28. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out. Of course, we really appreciate it. And we look forward to spending some time with you in the next couple weeks, talk about whatever it is we end up talking about. So for myself and Mitch, thanks again. Good night, and have a good evening. This playlist on Amazon Prime that was called 90s One Hit Wonders.
Nice.
And Come On Ride the Train by the Quad City DJs came on.
Damn right.
Holy shit. I was like, oh my God. I was dancing around making dinner. My wife was dying. I was like, I have not been this happy in months. Like,
no shit.
God, I fucking love that song. It is really long, though. It is like the end of it. The end of it reminds me of the end of the California with Dre and Tupac, where it's just the song ends, and then 3.5 minutes later, like I'm sorry, the rapping ends, and then 3.5 minutes later, the song ends. But yeah, it was actually really good songs. But I mean, at the same time, you could kind of tell why they were. But my wife, every song. She would go, I loved this song. This is not a one-hit wonder. I go, okay, name another song by this band. She's like, well, I don't know songs. I said, well, you may not know, but like you know you love this song. What's another song by them you loved? She's like, I don't know. I said, yeah, there isn't one. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like Freak Nasty, The Dip or whatever. I put my hand upon your hip. When I dip. You know that song? Is that a no?
You went silent for me there.
Oh, sorry. The Freak Nasty. You know that song, The Dip or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's like, I've never heard this song before. I was like, I bet you have.
Yeah. Everybody's heard that. It's like, man, I keep saying it. Raheem.
Oh,
Raheem's Dream. Freak No Mo. You knew. He was destined to be more than a one-hit wonder when he played the fucking skating rink in Roanoke, Alabama.
That's right.
You know, on that's Soul right. Night.
And, what's
and I wanted to go, but I couldn't.
Were you not allowed?
Well, it was frowned upon for people of my persuasion.
Your skin color?
Yeah, to go to the skating rink on Sunday night, which was Soul Night. So
it was like, so Soul Night was code. It wasn't just that they played
Yeah. Now they literally called it Soul Night, but yeah, it was.
But it wasn't like that was a night they chose to play like soul and funk music. Okay, I got you.
I was so disappointed because you know, Freak No More was a pretty big song, you know, back then. But and I was like, holy shit, he's coming to Roanoke. You got to understand, man. Roanoke was like blink and you miss it if you're driving through.
Right.
Like,
yep.
You know what I mean? It's I grew up in a nowhere town. In a nowhere state. So Raheem coming to the skating rink in my town was like the biggest shit that had ever happened other than Chris Farley going through the rehab program that we had at the hospital. So yeah, I met Chris Farley at Burger King.
Did you really?
Yeah. He was in town for rehab and I walked into Burger King to get lunch and I'll be damned if there isn't Chris Farley. Ordering a Whopper.
Wow.
And I was like, holy shit.
Was this like pre-Tommy Boy or after? Or, I mean, was he Chris
it's like,
Farley?
It's right in there. It's right in that time. It's post-SNL. It's his movie career. It's right before he died. So obviously the rehab program wasn't that good.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had Eddie Murphy came through. Phil Hartman came through.
Through rehab?
Yeah.
Because,
wow. You know, it's Roanoke. It's the middle of fucking nowhere. Nobody's ever heard of it. And apparently, our hospital had a really good rehab program.
Wow.
And supposedly, so people would come to Roanoke.
I met Mike Tyson in the mall.
Nice.
He was friends with a bunch of the people who went to my high school.
Oh, cool.
And he used to, like, park his car outside the school, like, right before class, the day would let out. And kids would straight up ignore what their teachers were saying to run out to the car and talk to Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
So so my friend and I were at Cross Gates Mall. We were going to a movie, and there's this, like, you know, there's Mike Tyson, white tracksuit, had a girl on his arm, short but fucking built like a brick shit house.
Right, right.
And I was like, my friend was like, holy shit, that's Mike Tyson. We used to, like, watch his fights, like, on HBO, you know,
oh, absolutely,
all 30 seconds of them.
Right, yeah, same
and
here.
And so we were like, oh, my God, Mike, we are such huge fans. Like, we've seen all your fights. And he could give a shit.
Yeah.
He was like, let these two fucking crack-ass motherfuckers come talk to me at the mall. I'm trying to go watch Running Man.
Yeah,
and
right.
So I was like, okay, all right, you know, that's cool. Like, I ain't going to harass a guy. And
right.
And we kept riding the escalator up, and he goes, well, you boys go to school. And I was like, oh, Albany High. He's like, for real? I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, my God. And then he started talking to us about, like, the basketball team and the guys he knew on the basketball team. Yeah, it was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. He was like, yeah, it was weird.
Awesome.
Yeah. He's like, oh,
yeah.
My God, that guy can dunk. And I was like, yeah, he's great. Like,
right, yeah. Well, my Chris Farley interaction was nothing like that. Basically, it was like, holy shit, you're Chris Farley. He's like, yeah. And I was like, will you sign this Burger King napkin?
And then after he died, I sold that shit on eBay. No,
no, I still have it. Somewhere I have it. I couldn't tell you where the fuck it is, but I have it.
That's fine. Well, this shit's going in the outtakes for sure. Absolutely.
New shit.
Stories of...
we're not recording this?
We are recording it. Absolutely. The show just hasn't started yet, so we'll throw it in the end. Just like I got manhandled by Mickey Rourke's bodyguard at E3.
No.
Yeah, so like when Mickey Rourke was filming... for Iron Man 2, and he had, like, the crazy hair and the my boy.
Yeah, my boy.
So he voiced this really horrible game for Bethesda. It was called, like, Rogue Warrior, and it was about this guy, Dick Pachinko or something like that.
I remember that shit.
And he, so Mickey Rourke did the voice acting, right? So
yes, I remember that.
So I'm at the Bethesda booth. And the way it worked was, like, they had, like, this – you went into the booth, and they had, like, all these game stations. And they had, like, Rogue Warrior. They had this game called Wet. They had some other shit.
I remember that, too. Yeah.
And so the thing about E3 is that there's no food anywhere. So when you find food, it's, like, fucking, like, like an oasis in the desert. So you, if they have food, you fucking eat that food. And yeah. So I'm standing there when they had like these raspberry bars. I'm not normally a big raspberry fan, but I was like, I'm hungry as shit. I'm standing here by the table minding my own business while Todd was looking at some game and Todd was looking at like the shittiest game ever, but trying to be polite with the developer who was like walking him through. And I'm just standing there like waiting, going, okay, yeah, that looks cool, whatever. So next thing you know, they're like, okay, Mr. Work's coming in, because he was going to do like a session where he's going to talk about voicing Dick Pachinko, whatever the fuck's name is, right? So I'm not like trying to get up in Mickey Rourke's face or nothing. I just was standing the way it worked was like where I was standing, I could see right out the entrance to the booth, and to my right was like down the hallway where this guy's going to go, right? So I start seeing Mickey Rourke walk in. Next thing you know, the biggest dude I have ever seen in my entire life is standing in front of me, and he puts two hands on my chest, and he just pushes me back. And I'm just like, what the – like, what? When the fuck did the mountain, like, arrive? Right. Like, this dude made the Rock look small. Like, that's how big this cat was. And I was like, what the – and I'm just standing there going, what the fuck? You know, like, I'm just trying to have a raspberry bar, dude. I don't give a shit. And then, yeah, so he did his thing, and then Mickey Rourke walked by, and I was like, oh, okay. Like, what, you think I was going to shank Mickey Rourke in the booth? Like And I remember Bill and Todd, they were like, what happened? Why'd that guy put his hands on you? I was like, oh, Mickey Rourke was walking by. And they were like, really? I was like, oh, yeah. They're like, what'd you do? I was like, I stood there eating a raspberry bar. Like,
like anybody gives a shit about Mickey Rourke.
It's like, all right, look, you've been in The Wrestler. All right, you've got, you know, some bona fides. Don't get me wrong. But please, this was – all right, this was Iron Man 2. I think in retrospect, we can all agree that –
this is nobody, this is a guy who was more into that job than anyone had ever been.
No shit, right? There, he was like, how about he has a bird? And they're like, yeah, okay. Like,